Warning, this podcast has stories of real-life events and true crime that happens every day. These stories may contain adult language and graphic or disturbing details not suitable for everyone. Listener discretion is advised. In our society, most people are content to go through their daily lives safely and peacefully. But our society is not always safe or peaceful. For that reason, some men and women answer a higher calling to defend and protect their fellow man. You probably know someone who is one of these people, or maybe you are one of these people. The ones who see and do the things most people would never want to. These things are sometimes heroic and beautiful, but often they are horrific and terrifying. It's these things they don't share about with other people. It's these things they carry with them, so you don't have to. But when they get together, they talk to each other about them. And they call these stories war stories. Welcome to another episode of War Stories. I'm Tom.
And I'm John.
And we're back. You had an excellent fishing trip. I was unable to attend due to family being in town.
Limits on Dorado.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, and big shout out to Dixie Wrecked Fishing Co. for all the gear I got to wear on
nice.
My fishing trip.
Yeah, and you repped them on the Locker Room podcast as well. If you want to know what cool hat John was wearing, it was Dixie Wrecked Fishing. You had a good time. I saw a video of you bagging mahi-mahi.
Yeah.
And it was gorgeous fish.
Steaks are marinating.
How
right
big?
Now. I think the biggest one was 15 pounds.
15-pound fish. Damn. That's pretty good.
Yeah, it's fun.
But we're not here to talk about fishing.
No, we're not.
We are here with Garrett. What's up, my dude?
How's it going, guys?
Hey, Garrett.
And Garrett's joining us via Skype because Garrett just moved. You were explaining you started a trade school and we're going to move to where the trade school is only to be told that they're only doing online classes.
Yeah, like, why am I going to move cross country right now?
So you moved, you still did move, but you only moved one state over because they're doing regular classes.
They're still doing hands-on courses, so. And a trade school, that's kind of a requirement.
Yeah, right. I mean, if it's a hands-on trade, how are you going to learn it when you're not hands-on?
Right.
Case in point, yeah.
So you and I met kind of by a random chance encounter, and then subsequently found out that we know some of the same people, only in another completely different state. we met in California and we discovered we know mutual people in Nevada, which is, it just shows how
small
this
world.
Community
yeah.
is.
Yeah. It's a small world.
Small world, but even more the veteran and law enforcement and firefighting community is a small community.
Sure.
And, you never know who you're going to meet or run into and who they knew. So, which is another reason to watch your ass.
Sure.
True.
Watch what you say and watch your ass. So we met and I had asked you if you wanted to come on and we dicked around with the schedule and stuff and finally got you on via Skype because you were in the middle of doing some life-changing stuff, getting registered for school, and now here you are. So why don't you tell our audience a little bit about yourself, your background, your experience, and we'll start there.
Brief overview, born and raised San Fernando, East LA, spent some time out in Henderson, Nevada. Only white kid on my block. So,
If you grew up in East LA, your skin is pretty pale to be growing up in East LA, so that must have been fun.
Yeah, I was little for a reason, but right out of high school, joined the Marine Corps. That's 2008. First deployment, 15th MU. Got home, switched units, went to regiment, then switched over units again. Went to a 1-1, did a second deployment with them. Got out, tried the college thing, didn't like it. Went back to the Corps.
You were completely separated from the Marine Corps and then went back, or were you on like a reserve status?
I was technically on my IRR time, my inactive ready reserve time.
Okay.
All I did back was activate my IRR time.
Got it.
So they let me do a few courtesy drills at the, because I was living up in North Dakota at the time. They let me do a few courtesy drills with the military police station up there, and until I ran out of time, I'm like, hey, you either need to, you know, like, shit or get off the pot, dude. You either need to freaking do this and become an MP, or you need to go kick rock somewhere else.
Got it.
Right.
I'm not going to be an MP because I didn't join the Marine Corps to screw over other Marines. I know a lot of other grunts feel the same way. But I told them, like, hey, send me back to the infantry. I'm like, all right, well, back to California you go. Cool. Mm. So
your second time, you decided to go back to the infantry as well?
Yep.
And now, one of the things that the audience can't see is you are an amputee, right? Is you're missing a leg at this point. And the first thing I noticed about Garrett when I said it was a chance encounter, see if John can see. Show John the tattoo that you have.
On the back of my left leg?
Yeah.
Get that.
And I'll describe it for the audience, but I want John to see this tattoo. This is what made me want to talk to Garrett in the first place. He's got an arrow on his right calf pointing to his left leg that says 1 foot in the grave.
That is so legit.
Isn't that awesome?
That's so legit. Yeah.
And I said...
That's probably the best thing I brought for my time as a Marine Corps.
Yeah, seriously. That is awesome.
I'll have to see if we can get you to have somebody take a picture of your tattooed leg pointing to your prosthetic.
Not a picture like that.
Yeah, that's amazing. I just want everybody to experience. So I saw the tattoo getting into the truck, and I thought to myself, I have to talk to this man. I have to talk to this man. And then subsequently we found out that we had mutual friends.
That's crazy. That's wild.
Yeah. So you went back, and my question was, when you went back, you had both legs when you went back.
Yeah.
And then was it on that second time, that second go around, that you ended up losing it?
Second go around, what got me medically discharged from that the rest of my IRR time was my first motorcycle accident. I shattered my femur in my left leg. That's what got me discharged. It wasn't until a year after that I lose my leg.
Oh, got it. Okay.
Interesting.
Got it. Okay. So, during your second go round, you have a motorcycle accident, and that subsequently is a cause of medical discharge.
Right.
And ultimate separation from.
Yeah, unfortunately, yeah.
Right. Okay.
So when you went back, were you planning on staying? Was it a lifer type thing, or?
I can't do my full 20. Yeah.
Oh wow. No, that's too bad.
Yeah, life gets in the way.
Yeah.
Life sucks sometimes, man. At 35, I'm expecting to retire at 55, and I'm retiring at 35. It was. Yeah. Yeah. Anyway.
It's like one of the first lessons my grandfather taught me growing up. We're at the top of his driveway, just staring it up at the friggin' hill. And he looks at me and goes, like, Wolf, please call me growing up. He said, Wolf, in life, shit happens. And he turns around, walks back in the house, and just leaves me there to friggin' ponder that shit.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's a good...
Yeah. 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 Exactly. Shit happens.
Shit happens.
Yeah. That was the end of the story.
My favorite is... Dennis Leary, who wasn't to me a comedian so much as he was a philosopher, when he said, life sucks, get a fucking helmet.
Well, back.
So anyway, so we got you here. You went out and then decided while you were out that you wanted to do the full 20. Is that how, or did you know?
I was playing with the idea when I was still on my first enlistment, which is why I extended my first enlistment. But, you know, curiosity got the best of me. I was like, no, I want to at least try this college thing. So I did, which I shouldn't have passed up the opportunity I passed up in order to get out, which was a shot with going to Scout Sniper School. So. Mm.
Yeah. Well, you know, we always make the best decision we think at the time. And
right. Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And I was like, no, the grass is greener on the other side of the fence. No, it's not.
No, it never is. So, were you deployed during your first enlistment?
Twice, yeah.
Okay, so you're deployed twice during first enlistment, and then you said it was about a year into your second enlistment that you got hurt. So you didn't get deployed during your second enlistment?
Well, it's not technically a second enlistment, but...
That's why I was calling it a second go-around, I guess, is a better...
Yeah, no, and that's essentially what it is. I mean, no, I didn't get deployed the second go-around. I just trained Marines. That's all I did.
And that's, I mean, I like training. I liked being a teacher.
Yeah.
So
I enjoyed it. And, you know, it's funny because I went from active duty to the reserves. And the reservists just soak up active duty guys, and they're very attentive to what we have to say to them, because they're like, hey, you know, this guy's been there, done that.
Right.
You know what's crazy about that? So I was an infantryman as well, but for the Army, and we were actually in at about the same time. I think you came in. You said you came in 2008?
Yeah.
So, okay, so I deployed in 2008. So the same time frame as far as military-wise.
Sure. Well, especially because you deployed, like, 6 months after you went in.
Yeah. So when I got out, and you know, they had the whole inactive reserve and the National Guard thing, right? And in my brain, mm-hmm. I'm like, well, I'll do the National Guard thing because I'm still going to get paid for it and do a little bit of college. Right. And it's funny that you said that they were so, you know, with the reserve, with you guys, was so attentive to what you guys had to offer. Because when I got to my National Guard unit, first of all, I think maybe a handful of those guys had deployed. And they treated us active duty guys like shit. Like almost
no
like
kidding.
Yeah. Like yeah.
So backwards, dude.
So backwards. It was like, oh, you guys think you're badass because you've done some shit? Nah, this is the National Guard.
And I'm like, I'm sorry, what now?
Yeah, that's how it was. Like, I'm serious. And I fucking hated every moment of it.
Wow.
Every single moment of it.
I'm gonna talk a little bit of shit here. When I got to Kuwait on my first deployment, we were doing the range out of Camp Bearing.
Mm.
And we're doing that with the Master Guard.
No, that's fine.
And,
yeah.
But, you know, we're doing this range, and we already ran the range. We're just kind of hanging out, chilling out, down with the range, watching these guys go through and do it themselves. The freaking one soldier walks straight up to the freaking firing line. Something happens, I don't freaking know, but he puts down his saw on the freaking bipod, thank God, and just walks away.
That's it?
I'm like,
hey, anyone can take this if you want it.
Yeah. I'm like, dude, gear drift, gear gift. I'm just saying.
Dude, you know, I was inactive and I was in the National Guard, and I have nothing good to say about the National Guard as it pertained to the unit that I was with. It was just not a good experience.
Where were you at?
For active duty?
Yeah.
Active duty, I was with the 101st Airborne out of Kentucky. Yeah, and then deployed out of there. Yeah, that was a good time. And the thing that sucked about leaving that was, at the time they had just stopped stop loss, so they were not keeping anybody that were getting out of the military, at least for the Army. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure how that was working for the Marines at the time. And we had got back, did another train up, and we were going right back pretty much. And they basically were like, hey, your out date is during this deployment. So either you got to re-up for 3 more years or get out a little early with an honorable. And that sucks, because at the time I just deployed with these guys, I'm a team leader and we're going to do our thing. And I'm like, fuck, do I leave these guys or do I get out and start my life? Because I wasn't going to be a lifer, and I knew that from the beginning. So,
okay, well, I mean, if you already crossed that bridge mentally, then...
Yeah, and that was a big gamble, and I ended up getting out. And in my case, you know, it worked out for me the way it worked with law enforcement and things like that. But yeah, man, fuck, dude, I wish I had your experience with the reserve status as you did, because I definitely did not.
That was really a blessing, but I mean, I'll be honest, like, I got a team right away, and then one of the Marines of my team, he hadn't even gone to friggin' ITB yet. I was like, how have you not gone to SOI or anything yet? And he's like, nah, dude, I've only gone to boot camp. I was like,
to me, that seems like a city cop getting shit talked by the California Highway Patrol.
Yeah, pretty much.
You do like one tenth of what I do, and you're gonna sit here and tell me what the fuck is up?
Yeah. Hey,
like, this is just like, I'm like, okay, you sent me an infantryman that doesn't know how to be an infantryman,
right?
What do you want me to do with that?
So, yeah, exactly. I was like, fuck, dude. All right, so you know, my hands are full, but I'll be honest. That Marine actually turned out to be pretty shit hot.
Nice.
Hey, you know
he's
what?
He's LAPD now.
Oh, nice.
Oh, good. Good. No, I was just going to say, so the floor is yours. I mean, you've got at least two deployments that I'm sure have got some pretty good stories from. Do you want to start by saying who you were attached to and all that?
Sure. First deployment, I was 1st Battalion, 4th Marines, Bravo Company. I went on the 15th MEU with them. They were going to do the 31st MEU, and I was actually a short timer, so I tapped out the car to go with regiment and all that, to get out. Then I heard that 1-1 was going to Afghanistan. I was like, oh, I'm hopping on extended for that. So, right, I went, but then they pulled a fast one on the last minute. I didn't go with my team. I went with, a security detail for closing over for Ramadi. So, it's like some shit up a cop. But the first deployment, I'll elaborate on the funny story with that one.
Okay.
So a lot of Marines, I'm sure, wish they had this kind of story just for the bragging rights of it. But I can physically say, yeah, I took a shit on a couple sailors.
I wasn't ready. I was not ready for that.
Well, it's much like the with the saline bags and the surgical lube. I wasn't ready.
I almost said, wait.
All right. So... let's go back to how you actually took a physical shit on sailors. Go.
Okay, so the backdrop of the story. We had just got done doing our jungle warfare training out in Indonesia. I got sick as a dog. I got some malaria or some shit. It was coming out of both ends. I was cleaning up and I was starting to recover, but, you know, my immune system's low, and unfortunately we had a form of dysentery going around the ship. So I naturally caught that. And they have a movie up on the flight deck one night when we were out at sea. And I was like, sure, I'll go up there, eat the fat kid food, and watch the damn movie. So I'm hanging out, and then, you know, it hits me like a ton of bricks. I got to throw up. So I go up to the smoke deck to go heave over the starboard side of the ship. As I'm, you know, attempting to heave and all that, I shit myself. So,
you know,
right there, when I got everybody, I dropped trowel, using my K-bar to cut off my shooting drawers, used the clean side of it to clean up a bit, hike up my stuff, fix my boot blouse things, square away my shit, and then, you know, I wing this fucking, these shitty drawers off the side of the ship. Mistake. Fucking mistake. The wind straight caught that shit.
Literally.
And you could hear over the video, over people talking, over everything, hear it. And you hear these two sailors who are standing freaking post down there on the outside. Like, what the fuck? I was like, oh. So I was like, time to go inside. I was like, I'm done. But I promise you, to this day, there's a couple sailors walking around 32nd Street Naval Base, talking about how they got shot at by a pirate.
Okay, so you know what I love about that story? Is his first sense as a Marine was, okay, I just shit my pants. I need to cut my underwear off and clean up so my shit looks tight.
Right.
I got to re-blouse my boots. I got to clean up because there's no... I can shit myself all I want.
As long as I look
as
good
long as
afterwards.
I look good afterwards. Ladies
That's
and gentlemen,
cool.
That is
cool.
Always look cool.
Yeah. No, you know what's funny?
There's no point in doing anything unless you look good doing it, all right? That's it.
You know what's funny about this? I caught dysentery twice when I was overseas. And, dude, that is no joke. It's like when you got to go, you don't have a choice. You have no bodily control.
It's fucking coming out.
Yeah.
That is where the term explosive diarrhea comes from.
Yeah, I still remember the first time I got it. I remember it felt like I was getting legit stabbed in the stomach, and I had made it to the shitter, and I start shitting, and then I start throwing up at the same time, and I actually paused for a second, like, what's happening right now? Like, I can't control what is happening.
So a clue to anybody suffering from dysentery, if you think you have to throw up, right? If you think you have to throw up, sit down on the toilet and grab a bucket every time. Don't
all the bases, dude.
Yeah. Don't gamble and say, I just have to throw up. I'll bend over the toilet and throw up in the toilet. No. Pull your pants down, sit on the toilet, and grab a bucket. Because if you're suffering dysentery, I guarantee you one triggers the other.
Yeah. And you know, and these poor dudes, I bet you, like...
Without a doubt.
Yep.
The poor guys were probably, like, doing somewhat, like, Firewatch or some shit that nobody fucking loves doing. They fucking hate their life standing out there for hours. And then just get smacked with shit. Like this is why we hate this. This is why.
Yeah, so that's a perfect metaphor for time in the military.
This is why we hate Marines.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, they knew a sailor didn't do it.
That's right. Well, that is a perfect military or a perfect metaphor for your time in the military, which is your job is going to suck and we're going to shit on you the whole time.
Yeah. Hey, you know what? And it's not like they treat... I guess from my experience, so before I was in the military, whatever, I did this kind of like a explorer program for the Navy or whatever. And mm-hmm. I got to sleep on a ship, but in the area that the Marines slept. And
read that.
Yeah, it was like living in the ghetto compared to where the sailors sleep. So, I mean, fuck them. Yeah. Whatever.
Well, the Marine Corps is to the Navy, the redheaded stepchild, is it not? Not to the Marine Corps. Yeah. But well, okay. So in order, I think it goes like Army, Navy fight over who is the, you know, OG, which technically, I guess that would be the Army, based on just, you know, George Washington.
Yeah, history.
We had to borrow France's Navy for a long time.
Right.
Right. So yeah. That would be the Army, then the Navy. And then you get the Marine Corps, right? And then the Air Force. And then the Coast Guard. And then somewhere in there, we're going to have to figure out where Space Force falls.
Mm.
So, we don't know yet.
Yeah, we don't know yet.
No,
nobody's seen them. They're like this. I did watch the TV show on Netflix. That was pretty funny.
Oh, was it?
Yeah, it's pretty funny. Anyway, so you vicariously shit on these sailors on Firewatch. And what you're saying is they never found out it was you whatsoever.
I hope we get a message from some dude in the Navy saying, this motherfucker.
Wait, what ship was it? What ship was it?
It was a USS Dubuque. That thing decommissioned, sitting off the coast of Korea.
Okay, so if you served on the USS Dubuque and took a pair of mystery shit drawers to the face during movie night, send us an email.
Yeah, we'll link you up. We'll link you guys up.
Right on, dude. Let me know. Sorry, I ruined your post. I don't know what to say.
Do you remember what movie it was?
No, because I didn't care. I had to shit, dude.
Oh, geez. So when you're deployed like that, how much time do you spend on the ship?
Oh, fuck. Like, all your time. Like, you hit different ports. Some ports are for training purposes, like when Jordan, Kuwait. Those are training ports. You'd have like refuel and refit ports like Guam, Philippines, Cebu, Darwin, Australia. That's a good time.
So then if you're deployed at sea for what? How 6 months? 9 months?
We're for about 7.5 months.
Seven and a half, okay. So between 6 and 9 months usually. And you're hitting ports every 2 weeks?
It varies. Like, sometimes we'll be in country for a month. Like, we're in Kuwait for about a month. We're in Jordan for about a month. Just training. When you're at sea, though, I mean, shit. There'll be times where you'll hit two different ports in 1 week. There'll be times where you'll go 2-3 weeks without seeing a port.
So, during those longer stretches... And the reason we ask is because a lot of people have no idea what, you know, we did an episode on what it's like to be a Marine for 3.5 years at Camp Pendleton and not go anywhere, you know?
I mean, Camp Pendleton's probably the best place to be stationed at. That's where I was stationed. San Diego's right there. It's not that far. And you're caught in an island, surrounded by the damn ocean. ago.
Right. Yeah. Whereas the Space Force apparently is about to get headquartered in Palmdale. Oh, so that's going to suck. Right.
Well, they're going to pop it.
The Marine Corps gets San Diego. The Navy gets San Diego. The Air Force gets Colorado Springs, right? I think that's where. Space Force, Palmdale.
It's like, fuck you guys.
Palmton, yeah.
So when you're on this ship for, you know, these prolonged period of time, what are you doing?
Yeah, that was going to be my question. Aside from, you know, throwing shitty drawers at sailors.
It's a pastime, dude. Yeah. I don't need your judgment.
This is the hobby.
So is that what it is? I mean, you're really just trying to find things just to pass the time, or?
General, dog.
Yeah.
Oh, man. So you jog around the ship, you work out in the gym.
I mean, we know they have, like, set time for different enlisted ranks to work out, because they don't have the room for the free gym to be, because fill up all the damn time.
Mm.
So there's, like, hatch times that you got to fill for when you go down to work out. If you miss your time, you don't get to work out that day. There are exceptions, like, you got posts, you can go work out on the officer's time, stuff like that. So they work it out. Usually, especially, you know, you got to help out. We're getting a free ride. So they give us, like, they task us out with stuff to do, especially if you're a junior Marine, which I was at that point.
Okay, so that again, that was kind of one of my questions. They do give you busy work. They delegate things to the Marines. Now, is it just straight up shit the sailors don't want to do and they just dump at you? Or is it like stuff that you guys are qualified to do, so therefore they get? I mean, how does that work?
I think it's definitely more of the shittier jobs that they don't want to do, but, you know, they got a bunch of their guys doing it too, and, you know, we're getting free fucking rides, so we help out.
Like painting?
My first job when I was on ship was scullery duty.
It was what duty?
Scullery.
Oh, scullery.
That fucking sucks. Washing the whole ship's goddamn trays.
It is prison rules.
I was going to say, you're basically doing a county term.
Yeah.
Yeah, straight up. Yeah. Fuck.
Wow, that's... So, if you've never been to county jail, just go on a deployment in the Navy as a Marine, and you'll know.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Same shit.
That's wild. Now, did they keep you guys separate to a certain degree as far as the Navy and Marines?
Oh my God, are you shitting me? They kept, we're the fucking animals.
Yeah.
Really?
Like, can you explain that a little bit?
Our fucking quarters look like the goddamn ghetto, and there's no. Now, granted, when we're back and forth, when the whole ship is back and forth, or, you know, back to base, whatever, the sailors who are on that ship still live on that ship. We go back to our barracks.
Well, so there's a little bit of a break. There's a work release program.
Yeah. Can you explain the separation, though, a little bit? Like, what exactly they have that you guys don't, or they're allowed to do that you guys aren't, like that type of stuff?
Yeah. How do you tell the difference? I mean, other than uniform, what is the difference in the treatment of sailors versus Marines?
Well, like, just walking into the different berthing areas, like, our racks were, like, four high, floor to ceiling at least. Sailors' racks are too high. I actually have, like, coffin freaking swords and shit like that in their racks. We had maybe foot lockers. Or not foot lockers, but wall lockers. Hmm. Maybe, if they're from.
Wow. So they're just basically saying, you don't live on this ship. We just need to give you a guest room and basically a cot because you're only here temporarily. We live here, so we're going to have some nicer...
Yeah, it's like, we'll keep you alive and give you a bed. And
right.
We'll get jail. You where you need to go.
Jail.
Yeah.
We'll keep you alive while you're here. That's all we have to do.
That's fucking wild.
Now, what about, like, activities and stuff like that? Is there a lot of... I mean, is it, like, you know, Jets and the Sharks? Is it, like, the Navy guys... hang out with the Navy guys and the Marines hang out with the Marines, or do you guys intermingle? Do you know?
I mean, I definitely intermingled with a few of the Navy guys. Like, when I was working, first I was doing schoolery duty. It was just me and the Marine doing it. And actually, the owner called Lehman Farley. They're like a grunt style kind of company. I'm actually wearing one of their shirts right now. he was the guy with jewelry duty.
Okay.
And then they moved me from doing scullery fucking work in just the regular shop, and then they moved me up to the wardroom and then to the officer's guy. I made a few maybe friends up there, and they're all right, you know?
So it depends on, it really just depends on you and your personality and the Navy guys and their personality as far as whether you...
It's very, yeah, absolutely, that nailed it, yeah.
Okay. That makes sense.
I got to get shit because I'm required to. But
again, it's that sibling rivalry or like exactly. Marines have a sibling rivalry, Navy guys have a sibling rivalry, but the Marine Corps and the Navy are cousins. So then there's that cousins rivalry where I can pick on my brothers, but you don't pick on my brothers. We pick on each other. Right, but then ultimately, when somebody comes along with a different last name, you rally the troops and you go fuck them up.
Yeah, I mean, that's the entirety of the military. It's like, that's all sibling rivalry. Like, we can all clown on each other. Somebody else from the outside steps in and tries that shit.
Right.
Okay.
I'll give you a perfect example. I was a cop. I did not serve in the military. I can joke around only to a point with people who have been in the military. And I know that because you're taught that. If there is a certain line of joking that I know not to cross because I didn't actually serve in the military, I'm not a military veteran. I get a little bit of leeway for having served in the police department and having been, you know, a public servant. But I have literally seen what happens when a cop tells a Marine a joke that goes too far. And it is not pretty. These were car partners. These men spent 12 hours a night in a car together, and I did not want to be in that car after that meal. Oh. I did not want to be in that car after that meal because I saw the look on the Marine's face when he heard this joke, and it was like, motherfucker, you're going to be lucky if I don't beat the shit out of you when we get back in the car.
By the end of the night?
By the end of the night. Oh. It was like if you're in a fight with a suspect tonight and you need a little help, I'm going to wait 10 seconds.
I'm just
going to
look the other way.
Help. Hey, partner, help out. Oh, yeah. Hold on. Be right there.
That looks like that really sucks.
Yeah. So it's just interesting. There is that unspoken line where you don't cross it.
Right.
And I've seen people cross it, and it's ugly. It does not work out well for them. But...
So I want to ask you about, or if you could go into a little bit about, because we've had a lot of people on that have had issues with like separation from like the military or law enforcement early, right? Or when they weren't ready to go type of thing. So can you talk a little bit about, you know, not necessarily your injury. We know what your injury is now, but, you know, when you were separated already knowing in your brain, this is what you wanted to do as a career, like how that process was initially.
Yeah, the transition.
Yeah, and then that transition into, you know, basically what you're doing now type of thing.
The number one thing that I think all that, regardless of branch, service, or what they did, MOS, indifferent. I think one thing we all go looking for when we get out, inevitably get out, is that brotherhood that we have.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, cool.
Because that's absolutely irreplaceable. Like, you won't, I'm sorry to say it, but you're not going to find it again anywhere else.
Sure.
Nope.
You're going to try like hell. And I know I did. And a lot of us go looking for it the right places. A lot of them, people like I did, go looking for it the wrong place. Get involved with some of the wrong calls off of that same thing.
Well, you can directly correlate the existence of the Hell's Angels to veterans looking for a brotherhood. Mm-hmm. Right?
Absolutely. And that's almost exactly where I was going with that. Yeah. Motorcycle clubs in general. Heavy, heavy, heavy veteran presence in all of them. It doesn't matter if it's 1% or not. There's heavy veteran presence in all MCs.
Right, right. So you are searching for that camaraderie when you separate. And where do you look for it? I mean, I know where I start looking for it, but everybody's different, and you do tend to look towards organizations that have a tight bond, and as you said, there is no tighter bond than the military.
I mean, especially in the infantry. He can vouch for this. You know, you spend my A gunner said it the best from when I was with 1-4. He flat out said, he's like, you know, I can honestly say that I spent more time with you than I did my own wife the entire time that I was with that unit. And you learn, like, all the intimate details about each other. Because you got no one else that you spend time with more than that person.
Right. Yeah. No, that's true.
You spend more time like, with them than you do. You literally spend every waking moment with.
That's absolutely accurate in what he was getting at with that. He just pointed out that, you know, he was my A gunner. I was his SAW gunner. And just by billet and what we do, we spend a lot of damn time together.
Right.
Right.
So, unfortunately, in our situation and what we do, you know, that amounts to a lot more time with each other than we did, like, our wives. We were both married at the time.
Right.
He's married with his. That deployment wasn't so good for me, so.
So to the people that have never served but are married, right, and have a good marriage, imagine if not only are you married and have to spend a majority of your waking life with another person, but imagine that every moment that you're around that person, you're either in a safe zone preparing to protect each other's lives, or you're in a completely dangerous fucking place relying on that person to watch your back. Imagine every time you leave your house, right, and you go to Walmart to go shopping or to you know, Home Depot to do some home improvement, you grab the wife and you go, she goes with you. Imagine everywhere you go, you take your wife, and actually it's not that hard to imagine in today's society with what's going on in this country. Right. Imagine everywhere you go, you and your wife are both relying on each other to make sure that your back is covered and you don't get killed by somebody trying to kill you. That would develop a marriage like no other, right?
A real-time Mr. and Mrs. Smith.
Right, a real-time, yeah, yeah. I didn't even think about it that way. But yeah, so there's an added component to being in law enforcement or being in the military with your partners that, you know, the military, you get this combination of marriage and life and death. Protection, and those two combinations are, you know, alone they're powerful. You put them together,
sure,
forget it. So it's understandable why you go looking for that camaraderie. So where do you go looking for it? Obviously, you said MCs, because that's a brotherhood that's very similar.
And it was a life that I was kind of born into. My family's always been around, you know, that structure and different motorcycle clubs and all that. That's why I had all these uncles growing up.
Right. Right. It's funny. One of my closest friends, he's a deputy sheriff, and he was raised in the MC culture as well. Yeah. And they were more like a 1.5%, you know, they weren't terrible, but they weren't angels either. Yeah. you know, and, right. So you go looking for it. And
both of them are familiar. A, you know, it's the MC thing that I was born into. And on top of that, most of those guys who are already involved in that are a lot of times Marines I actually served with or am affiliated with through the Corps or through the club.
Yeah.
It's almost like a fishing hole to just go find a veteran presence. Like, similar exactly. To the VFW. You know when you go to the VFW, you know who's going to be there, right?
Right.
You exactly. Know you're going to show up and find people that are like you. This podcast, people download it and listen to it because they know they're going to find people like them. You go to an MC. So how did it, were you in an MC? Is that what ended up happening? Or are you still in an MC?
I'm not currently. I was with an MC for a while up in North Dakota. We tried to start our own down in California. Then things happened.
Yeah. Yeah, right. Well, we had one of our guys, in fact, it's funny that we mentioned the saline bags and the surgical lube because Mikey, who's been on, he actually is in a veterans-only MC called the Infidels.
Okay.
On the East Coast. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, it is literally veterans-only. They're not necessarily a one percenter club, but they're definitely a three-patch. And it's...
That's big right there. You're a three-patch club. Yeah.
Yeah.
Three-piece patch. That's credit.
Yeah, exactly.
A street cred.
Well, so there's a weird element to MCs that maybe, and this goes to back to my law enforcement days because I went to so many training classes when I was working NARCs, that MCs, you have to study them the way you have to study the mob, or the way you have to study, you know, prison gangs, because there's a culture you have to understand if you want to understand how they function and how to get into them. And what's interesting is they do have, you know, hierarchies and all that kind of stuff. Like Sons of Anarchy did a decent job representing.
It's very traumatized, but for the most part, they're fairly accurate.
Right. It's, I mean, it's a real MC doesn't have that shit happening every week the way Sons of Anarchy did, but it does have that shit happening. That shit does happen. And one of the things people don't necessarily understand is what you said about having a three patch on the back of your cut. You have to have permission.
Oh, yeah.
To have that.
Yeah.
And to this day, one of the biggest feuds between two MCs, there are two rival MCs, both of which have a nationwide presence in the United States, one of which has an international presence. The whole beef started with one MC putting a rocker on the bottom of their cut without permission from the other MC, and the rocker basically just said California and covered the entire state. And the other MC said, you can't claim the whole damn state. And they said, watch us. And then it became a war. So if you don't think that earning the permission and status to have other more outlaw MCs allow you to rock a three-patch cut, it's a big deal.
When you have these kind of misunderstandings, that's how you have lawless happen.
Mm.
Right.
Makes sense.
And we're talking about one of these MCs has actually launched rocket attacks against another MC in another country, if you can believe that.
Old bar, dude.
That's wild. That's wild. So then what would you have? I mean, the MC stuff aside, what if you were going to talk to any of these guys getting out, you know, what would have been your advice getting out, especially coming when, and I mean like being separated early when it's not planned, like what advice would you have for someone like that? I didn't mean to put you on the spot, by the way.
It's a tough question.
I asked because you lived it.
Yeah.
If I can give some honest, solid advice, slow down. Take your time with this shit. There ain't no rush. Okay. It's either going to be the way it is for a long time or until you change it. So you might as well take your time and change it the right way.
Yeah. Take a breath and figure it out. I was one thing that I was rushing towards, and it wasn't the military, but it was like, okay, what do? I need to make a decision. Because uncertainty is an uncomfortable place to live.
Well, especially when you had certainty.
Yes.
And you had control.
Right, right. You had the things that you didn't have control over. Mm. You had a paramilitary organization that gave you structure and orders, and therefore I have control over these things, and I accept my responsibility and my control over these things. And then I have been told that anything beyond this point, I'd have no control over, and I just need to go with the program. And I accept that as well. So everything is taken care of and structured.
Right.
And then you get to the unknown. You get to, okay, there's no structure. That's a very uncomfortable place to live. And I think to your point, Garrett, a lot of people try to rush through that phase because they don't like how it feels to live in that uncertain place.
And nobody does. That's an absolutely uncomfortable place to be for anybody, any human being.
Sure.
Personally, and I know this is on each and everyone individually, but for me personally, I turn to faith.
Yeah.
That got me through a lot of it. You know, it's like when you don't know, when you have no answer, put it in God's hands. He got you this far, didn't he?
Yeah, true. And I see that people who, and again, we're not trying to be religious. It just happens to be a running theme that a lot of people who have found peace find it through some form of religion, and find it through faith in something bigger than themselves. In some cases, the faith in something bigger than yourself was when you were 18 and you had faith in the Marine Corps. And you joined the Marine Corps, and that you put your faith in something bigger than yourself. You said, I have no direction in my life. I don't know what I'm going to do with myself. I'm afraid of the future. But the Marines told me, if I trust myself to them, they will show me my purpose, my function, my abilities, and my future. And then when I get out, I will have a clearer understanding of who I am, what I'm capable of, and where I'm going in my life. So
and
that
those things are all accurate.
Yeah. So that trust in the military becomes your faith in a higher authority. Mm-hmm. It just happens to be the higher authority of the military.
Yeah.
Right.
So when you have a high, when you have faith in any higher authority, it takes away some of that uncertainty. And for no other reason, it's a good thing. If for no other reason, that's a good thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know we've talked about the whole, like, you know, reprogramming of your thought process, you know, when you get out, whether that's on your own or when you're separated early or whatnot, you know, because I agree with you. You know, I don't think people really take the time to learn themselves again, because you have to learn yourself again.
Because you're different. You've been changed.
And you don't realize that yet.
Right.
When
right.
You have no idea, no concept of that.
Right.
Because you were in it when the change was happening.
Yeah.
You come home and everybody at home sees you differently. But you don't see yourself differently because you were there the whole time. I look in the mirror and I see the gray hair in my beard and I'm surprised by it. I'm like, what the, what?
Yeah.
Who's that guy?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. I've never said it that way, but yeah, you're right. You just need to slow down. You got to slow down. I wish I did that.
My granddad, he's a Marine War Heartbreak Bridge veteran.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he got two Purple Hearts up there. He actually, he was with the 25th Infantry Division. He's a Wolfhound stationed out of Schofield Barracks, Hawaii.
Which makes sense why he called you Wolf.
Ironically, as it turns out, he was next to my unit, first Marines up on Heartbreak Ridge. And when I got to Kuwait on my first deployment, when I was with 1-4, I ran into his unit.
Oh, wow. That's crazy.
That's really cool.
But he's always told me, since I was knee-high to a grasshopper, slow down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Slow down. And that has never made more freaking sense than when I was getting out of the Marine Corps. I mean, I blatantly didn't listen to it.
Sure.
And I, you know, marched to the beat of my own drum. But if I could turn around and redo it and give any advice to any of these guys getting out, slow the fuck down, dude.
Well, first of all, we have to, if your grandfather's a veteran of Heartbreak Ridge, you need to call him and see if he'll come on and tell us a story. That's freaking amazing.
I'll get hold of him. I mean, yeah, he's 90 this year. He just turned 90.
Dude, we got to get his story down on record before he can't tell it anymore. That's amazing. If he's willing to do it, we'll jump through hoops and fire to get him on here.
We'll figure it out.
We'll figure it out. Where's he at?
I'll get all of them and I'll make that happen.
Where's he at?
He's in Glendale, California.
Oh,
we can do it in person. To him, because if he's 90, we'll go out to Glendale and sit down with him and make him as comfortable as possible. And hell, come join us, you know.
I'm gonna try and figure out some time for school
for sure.
Get out, you know, because I gotta get out there and see him soon anyway. I'm trying to get them moved right now from Glendale, California, up to the Bay Area.
Maybe that's not such a good idea now. Moving from Glendale to the Bay Area. You get some Gran Torino shit with your grandpa.
That man still has stuff with Grant.
Yeah. Oh, I believe it. That's awesome.
But stamp, Springfield Armory, 1944.
Wow.
Wow. I'm jealous. I'm super jealous. Those are rad. But you know what's funny is you say slow down, and then you talked about your grandfather giving you that advice. And I remember watching the movie Colors as a kid, and there was a lot about that movie I didn't understand, and then I went back and watched it after I became a cop, and I understood it a lot more.
Yeah.
But what I did understand and what made a huge impression on me, for those of you who haven't seen it, it is everybody goes, what's the most accurate cop movie ever? And I said, well, if you take the movie Colors and you mix in Super Troopers, you have the most accurate cop movie ever, because it's both, right?
True.
But there is a scene where, you know, Robert Duvall plays the seasoned veteran, salty, you know, cop, and Sean Penn's the young, you know, impetuous cop. And Robert Duvall tells the story of the two bulls.
Right.
And that story, even as a kid, resonated with me because it was something my grandfather always said as well. And my grandfather was a World War II veteran, and he just said, take a breath, figure your shit out, and then move. Don't like, and you're talking about a guy who tried to jump out of a plane without a parachute because he was so freaked out. He's like, we're going down. And he jumps out of the plane and the radio operator drags him back in and says, you can't jump without a parachute. And I think that moment taught my grandfather, slow down.
Right.
Slow down. So,
yep.
You know, but that message, it's interesting that you boiled it down to that. Cause I don't know that I would have come up with that one little piece of advice, but it makes a lot more
sense.
It's
so simple and it has such a good impact. Yeah.
Yeah. Nothing's, you know, life's going to happen regardless. It's going to happen and it's going to happen at the speed it's going to happen at. Mm-hmm. So trying to slow it down or speed it up, just take a breath and slow yourself down. Cause that's the only thing you can control.
Yeah,
exactly. Slow down what you can and all of that's only yourself.
But I think we also make mistakes when we rush, and we make impetuous sure. decisions when
sure.
we rush.
But there's multiple times where, you know, I've rushed through things, and then I've thought about it afterwards, like I should have just fucking slowed down for a second.
Yeah,
I could have. In the end, you realize, oh, I could have just slowed down and done that accurately.
Well, okay, whether it's whether it's a traffic stop,
yeah,
or mm-hmm. something you're doing while you're fishing,
sure.
I mean, how many times have you tried to bring a fish in too fast because you got excited and lost it?
Yeah.
You know, or how many times have you tried to catch a bad guy and, you know, you catch one bad guy and miss the other four going out the back because mm-hmm. you rush in, or you don't wait for backup and you get into trouble, or all these different things.
Yeah.
I think that's a really good way to put it, is just slow down in everything.
Yeah.
So, well, what is your big takeaway? Because one of the things we get a lot, and I have some emails we can read and talk about at the end. But what is your big takeaway? Because we get asked literally more than I would have thought. Young people now that are saying, hey, I've listened to your show and it's really actually made me more interested in joining the military, or, you know, becoming a police officer or becoming a firefighter or this or that or the other thing. And then they always ask, but you always talk about how the terrible thing, or the, you know, how being a police officer just isn't the same, or how it's so, being a veteran, you know, they treat you like shit and there's a lot of, should I really do it? And the answer is yes. If you're capable of doing it, because you don't do it knowing that you're going to be treated like a king. You do it knowing that you're going to be treated like shit, but you're doing it for the service aspect. So what would you say to people that are asking you, if somebody comes to you and says to you, knowing all the stuff you've been through, would you go and do it over again? Would you still join the Marine Corps? Number one. And number two, do you think I should? What would you say to those people?
A million times, yes. I'd absolutely join the Marine Corps all over again. Marine Corps has given me so much more than I ever gave it.
That's an interesting mm-hmm. statement. Because it is very true that a lot of people have said, it gave me more than I gave it. And
Absolutely. The brotherhood that I still have from the Marine Corps is not going anywhere. That's irreplaceable.
Right.
Yep.
Well, let's see here what we have. We have some emails, and maybe you can help us answer these. Sure. Let's see. Well, first of all, the rules of, let's review these. These are an interesting set of rules that I copied because it's a different set of rules for combat than I remember. Some of them are similar. Some of them are different, but see what we think. It's 20 rules for combat. Number one, you're not Superman. Okay. That seems right. But sometimes, even though you're not Superman, you have to do Superman shit. So I would
mentality like you are.
Yeah, you have to know you're not, but act like you are.
Right.
So that's the caveat. Number two, if it's stupid but it works, it's not stupid.
Fact.
I would say that's accurate. And again, these are all rules for combat. Number three, never draw fire; it irritates everyone around you.
I'll piggyback on that. Incoming rounds have the right of way.
Yeah. Incoming rounds have the right of way. I like that. Number four, when in doubt, empty the mag.
Fact.
Okay.
Well,
I would add.
I had a drum, not a mag, so
But also, I mean, it depends. Is it your first mag? Go ahead. If it's your last mag, yeah. No. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Never share a foxhole with anyone braver than you are.
There's so many different ways that can go.
Right, exactly. Number six, your weapon was made by the lowest bidder.
Yeah.
Which is all the more reason to take care of it.
Yeah.
Because if it was made cheaply, then you better make damn sure it's well maintained.
Mm-hmm.
Because nothing's worse than something that's made cheaply and not maintained. Just
then you got a big piece of shit. That's
yeah, exactly. Okay. Number seven, if you can't remember, the claymore is pointed towards you.
Wow. That shouldn't even have to be a rule. Like,
right.
Whatever.
But I would argue if you can't remember, then you deserve what's coming.
Yeah.
You kind of earned it.
Yeah, you earned it.
Yeah, you earned it. Number eight, all 5-second grenade fuses only last 3 seconds.
I mean, grenade fuses are 8 seconds, but...
Okay. I never thought about it.
Number nine, try to look unimportant. They may be low on ammo. I guess that's true. What's that movie where the guy says, don't wear your whites, they shoot at the whites?
Oh, yeah.
I think there's a few good men. Let's see. Number 10, the enemy diversion you're ignoring is actually the main attack.
Yeah.
That's a pretty good rule.
That's a good rule. I think that's accurate.
Number 11, if you're short on everything except enemy, you are in combat. Okay. You feel that one really deeply. Let's see. Number 12. There you go. Incoming fire has the right of way. Number 12 on the list. Number 13, no combat ready unit ever passed inspection.
Sure. No, I'll tell you right now, there's two kinds of Marines. There's great, 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 great garrison Marines, and there's awesome field Marines. You're not both.
Yep. Well, aren't the great garrison Marines called recruiters?
Something like that.
Well, we've had Marines on the show who talk about knowing another Marine who is a social media icon Marine recruiter / whatever, and she's a great face for the Marine Corps, but she's
no go in
combat. So, you know, let's see. No inspection ready unit has ever passed combat, and no combat Marine has ever passed inspection. That was the same rule. 15, teamwork is essential. It gives them other people to shoot at. All right.
Yep.
Stay with your team. Number 16, if the enemy is in range, so are you. That should be obvious.
Yep.
Number 17, tracers work both ways.
Yes, they do.
Yep.
That's good.
Yes, they do.
Number 18, the only thing more accurate than incoming enemy fire is incoming friendly fire.
Not fun.
Not there's nothing friendly about friendly fire.
There's nothing friendly about friendly fire.
Yeah, you could just call it unfriendly fire. We understand it's not enemy fire, but it is not friendly either.
You know what's funny? That's cool. I'm not going to go on a tangent about it, but there was a time when I was in Afghanistan where, because the enemy we were fighting has a lot of old rounds, you know, from like Russia and like, you know, all this stuff. So I remember you have our tracers and their tracers, two very different colors. And I remember it was like dusk. And it wasn't our first engagement, but it was our first engagement, I think, probably getting into the night. And I remember just seeing two different colors flying through the air, you know, we're going back and forth with each other. And I'm like, this shit is like fucking Star Wars. Like, it's like Star Wars. Like, I remember thinking that. And I'm like, okay, I got to get back to fighting now.
But isn't that weird?
I'm so happy I'm not the only one.
Right?
Dude, it's crazy.
But that's the thing, like... when you get into those situations, your brain doesn't, like, you get two brains, right? You get the muscle memory brain that does the things automatically without you even realizing you're doing it. That's how you dump mags and reload and do all that stuff. And people go, well, how many mags did you fire? Well, I don't know, just half a mag. And it turns out you're completely ran through three of them. You know, that stuff happens automatically. But that also does allow the conscious part of your brain to kind of take these little tangents and observe weird things that, because of the moment you observe them in, get burned into your brain. Like, you remember thinking, wow, this shit looks like Star Wars. Or somebody will look down and go, oh, fuck, I forgot to tie my shoe. You know?
Yeah.
I know, for me personally, I don't know about you, but smell.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's something I remember.
We just did that episode with James.
Yeah, we did it. We did it one with the smell, and I think by far that something that will throw me into a tailspin backwards is a smell more than anything.
Yeah, for sure.
Like,
okay, so we're almost done. Number 19: radios will fail as soon as you need fire support.
Episode number one.
Mm-hmm. And number 20: intelligence is always wrong. I would say that's about that. Yeah, that's about
just
right.
Just depends,
but.
Yeah,
that's,
having intelligence.
It's similar to the dispatcher never gets the call right.
Yeah.
Let's see. All right. So let's see. We've got an email. What's that?
Just one.
Yeah. Let's see. I just want to say I've really enjoyed your podcast. I was curious if you guys could ever talk about the growing number of concealed carriers and how to safely do that in relation to police officers. I've thought through a lot of scenarios and wondered what I should do when police show up. I don't want to be seen as the aggressor if I can help it. And what if I want to help a police officer who is under fire? I've worked corrections before and moved on from that back to landscape management. I've got a friend who's a detective sergeant in a small town I grew up in. I'm going to test for their department. I'm 37 years old, though, and with the social crap going on, I'm not really sure if it's a good idea. I'm also a highly analytical guy who likes to look at possibilities, and I wonder if that could get me in trouble in this profession. After I've done something a while, like most people, I can improve and make fast decisions in changing situations. I'm also hard on myself after the fact because I replay scenarios over and over. I'm wondering how it could have gone better. Anyway, thanks again. I appreciate your guys' service to our society. God bless, Russ. So I think there's two different questions here. The first is how to help police officers if you're not a cop, but you see them engaged.
Right.
And then the second one is, does his personality type maybe fit with law enforcement if he's considering going into it?
Well, the personality thing, he's not going to know until he's there.
Right.
So, you know, I've always told people, make sure you go on not one ride along, but go on multiple ride alongs
with different agencies.
With different agencies, because everyone's got their own culture. You know,
yeah.
You don't know if you're going to fit in until you get there. There's ride alongs I've been on, and I'm like, fuck no, I'm not coming to this agency. There's no way I won't fit in.
You and I just had this discussion about, hey, what about this agency? And you go, nah, it's
too bougie.
Too bougie.
Yeah.
Can't do it.
Yeah, I'm not doing
But then
it.
Another one, you're like, oh, and they're only separated, you know, by 100 miles. Or
yeah,
something
literally.
Like that. But,
The other thing is, it you know, in a perfect scenario, let's just say that you're lawfully carrying a concealed weapon. You're allowed to have it.
Yeah.
And you see an officer engaged. Well, I'm going to say 99% of the time, you probably don't need to get involved. Probably. I do believe there's always that 1% chance, especially when you work for agencies that are out in the middle of fucking nowhere and backup's going to take 5, 10, 15, 20 minutes just for them to get to you, that I could see them possibly needing help. Now, that I'm trying to put myself in a scenario where I could possibly need help, and someone running up to me with a gun,
gonna
probably not a good idea.
Gonna get smoked.
So I would think to his email, it would be more along the lines of, you need to, before you pull a gun out, you need to make yourself known who you are and what yep. you're trying to do as many times and as loud as you can, multiple times before you bring any type of firearm into that situation. Because if a cop is already fighting for his life, he's already in the red, so just don't make it worse.
And we've talked about it on the show, but I'll tell you straight up, off-duty cops pull a gun and get smoked.
Yeah.
With their badge yeah. in their hand.
Yeah.
I almost got smoked and I was on duty.
Yeah.
But I was playing close.
Happens. Yeah, happens.
It happens. So if it involves you pulling your firearm and there's already a cop involved, chances are that's the bad way to go. That's the, I think that's like the last, like that cop better be unconscious and about to get executed. And then you pull your gun, walk up and put one right in the back of his head. That's different than a cop on the ground fighting and you can, you know, jump on the guy's back and wrap your arm around.
Yeah, I think
his
it's pretty
neck.
Obvious what you're trying to do.
That's yeah. that, you know, if yeah. you get involved hands on with a crook and you give the cop some breathing room and some space to get position and control, that's different. So I would say if you're a concealed carrier and there's a cop around, don't break leather. Mm. If yeah. you can possibly yeah. avoid it. If, you're just a regular citizen and you're not a concealed carrier, you know, you can, and you're trained, you can observe and kind of like, there was a recent incident where the police were wrestling with the dude and the guy had a gun in his waistband and there were two citizens nearby and the gun comes out of the dude's waistband and one citizen just stood over the gun, didn't touch it, but stood over it to make sure that if the suspect got loose, he couldn't get to it and grab it and use it.
Right.
And then the other guy went and tried to, you know, get some hits in and get some licks in on the suspect so the cop could get, you know, basically get the guy distracted. And the cop basically got control of him and got him into custody. Those kinds of situations, that's probably the best way you can help.
Yeah, I agree.
Being a concealed carrier, that's for your protection when there isn't a cop around. Mm-hmm. The as much as I want to say that's a really nice idea, it's just, there's too many ways it could go bad.
Yeah, I agree.
So I think that answered that question. And to the point, if highly analytical minds make great detectives, but if your personality can't handle the rest of the job, you know, I mean, Columbo doesn't exist. Mm. You know, Columbo had to work patrol before he became a detective. And I can't imagine a sloppy, forgetful motherfucker like that working patrol. So just like you said, go on the rides, and see if it's right for you.
Yeah, get a taste.
Get a taste. And state police, county sheriff, and city PD are all very different cultures. So try them all out. You might find that one of those works for you. I guess that's about the way to explain it. Garrett, thank you for coming on the show. We're out of time. But we'll have you back on anytime.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully, you know, we can get this set up with your grandfather as soon as possible.
I'll help.
Just let us know. We'll make the trip out to Glendale. It's not like it's that far from us.
No.
And we'll hopefully we get to see you in person again there. Yeah. And John, do you have anything?
No.
Okay. So follow us on all the socials.
Mm-hmm. We know we got. Oh, sorry.
Like, rate, subscribe the podcast on iTunes, Google Play. It helps us out. If you can donate to Patreon and become a patron of the podcast, that's how we keep this supported. We have tried. And we may end up with advertising at some point, but here's the deal. We have had advertisers hit us up and be like, yeah, you know, could we tone down this or that? And I said, no, we're not going to tell our people they can't give their raw, uncensored thoughts and stories and opinions. That's what makes this show.
Right.
So sponsors like what we're doing. Hell, we even worked with one that was going to sponsor that was like, they were basically saying, we provide a service getting vets hooked up with colleges and mm-hmm. using the GI Bill. And we'd love to advertise because you've got a lot of veterans and this. And I said, okay, great. So she listened to the show and she goes, yeah, it's a little too raw for us, I think, but I love what you're doing. So getting support from our listeners is probably the best way we can. That's through the merch, you know, buying the Ranger panties, buying the t-shirts, mm-hmm. the hats and the patches are almost here. The patches are done.
Yep.
We're just waiting for them to arrive. So that's where we're at with that stuff.
We're going to
pick up a pair of Ranger panties for you guys.
Yeah. We'll
get you
just
a pair.
DM me and we'll get your size and we'll get you a pair. Don't worry about it. You had something.
No, I was going to go into the shirts and stuff, okay. But you covered it.
Yeah. So, and as far as we get DMs, the Ranger panties were only available in limited quantities, but we got such a good response from them. We will be doing a much larger run and making them available on the website. So if you didn't get a pair this go around, we still have a couple sizes, pairs left. You can hit me up, DM me. We have the PT shorts and the Ranger panties, but we will make them available. And the smaller sizes, I guess the girls really, that misprint of the white logo on the smaller shorts, some of the girls liked it. So we'll be doing some white logo shorts on the Ranger panties as well.
Yeah.
I guess that's it. So until our next episode, come home with your shield or honor.